Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Paul Hansen. It's a pleasure to welcome you to our board meeting this afternoon. And we'll go ahead and call the meeting to order and ask for a roll call. Ken, please.
Paul Hansen.
Here.
Betty Naylor.
Here.
Brett Shinoff.
Here.
Tage Flynn.
Here.
Roger Friedel.
Here.
Brad Johnson.
Here.
David Sackerson.
Here.
David Stevens. Mark Stevens. I have a quorum of 7 members.
Thank you very much. We have 2 sets of minutes. I'll take them separately. The first is the minutes from July 8th, 2016. Any discussion on those minutes? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
I have a motion by Tage, a second.
Second.
And a second by Betty. All in favor indicate aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion is unanimous. Moving on then to the August 4th, 2016 minutes. Any discussion to those? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
I have a motion by Betty.
Second.
Who was that?
Either take your choice.
Roger?
Sure.
I have a second by Roger. All in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion is unanimous. Let's move into now to the Financial Assistance Committee report. Betty, I'll turn this to you to conduct.
Thank you. The first item on our Financial Assistance Committee report is a status report. Michael?
Good afternoon. Put that back there so I don't bump it too much. The state fund, if you look on page 1 of the report, currently we have a balance of $2.3 million in the fund. Over the course of the next year, we're expecting about $4.5 million to come in to the state fund for a total by July 31st of 2017 of $6,800,000 in the state fund. Page 2, well, let's back up a minute, stay on page 1 for a moment. I'd like to call your attention to the particular numbers in that summary. The total state hardship fund at this point, $885,000. We have authorized, as the board has authorized, almost $1.5 million in hardship grant money out of the state fund. We are proposing an additional $345,000 today, and that will then put us with the remaining hardship fund of minus $952,000. If you look down in the lower portion, we're expecting interest payments on outstanding loans of $921,000, almost $922,000, which basically means that for the next year, we are already about $30,000 in the red in our hardship grant fund on the state program. We can probably do a little bit of cash flow manipulation and still have some grant money to issue and to authorize on the state program. However, staff will be paying very close attention to the amount of grant that we're able to authorize over the course of the next year. And just to let you know that that's coming, we'll probably be giving more lower interest, even going down to more zero interest loans than grant over the next year, simply because we do not have the grant money available in the program.
And you're talking calendar year?
Between now and 2017, July of 2017.
Okay.
So it's a running annual annual number.
And just to clarify, we don't have any items today using state funds, though. All of our projects today are federal, aren't they?
Yes.
Right. The $345,000 was Henryville. That the board authorized at the emergency meeting.
Okay.
$345,000 that you see there, Sandy did not change that from Henryville as the proposed $345,000 grant that the board authorized to Henryville.
That's
back
not
in.
On
did that
our
one get
agenda.
On our agenda?
No, that's the emergency funding,
right,
that the board authorized at the teleconference meeting on August 4th, I think it was.
Okay.
So that's that $345,000 on page 1. You're correct. All of our projects today are federal. And that's one of the reasons that they are all federal is because we didn't have the level of grant money that we needed to keep the water rates affordable. Page two, again, is a list of projects that are not yet closed, projects that are closed and in progress. Are there any questions on any of those projects that I might be able to answer?
Just update us on Huntsville. That's been out since September of 14. It's on the planning grant.
Huntsville kind of goes back and forth. I've had a couple of discussions with Huntsville recently about moving forward on that money. They waffle a little bit about whether to use that money as planning for a master plan or planning for their water treatment plant that they're looking at designing and building. And so we've been working with them to get that closed, but they really haven't decided how they want that, how to apply that particular planning authorization. So
I notice it is a loan.
It is loan, yes.
We don't have grant portion in it.
It's not tying any of our grant money up. Okay. Any other questions on the state program? Moving then to the federal program. Currently, we have just over $16 million in the program. Over the course of the next year, we're expecting another $18 million in funds. That includes our 2017 capitalization grant, the state match, and our second round repayments. For total available estimated funds through August 1st of 2017 of $34 million. The federal program is in the same basic shape, grant-wise, as the state program. MLRSA's hardship fund currently has $2.7 million. Authorized federal hardship is at $3.3 million for a deficit of $600,000. So again, grant money through the federal program will be very limited. We will still have our principal forgiveness money that we're allocated each year by Congress through the appropriation. We're not sure what that appropriation, what form that will take, whether it will be a 20% maximum or a 20 to 30% window or exactly what Congress will do yet, since they have not taken that measure up. But we will have principal forgiveness through the federal program, just no hardship grant money. Again, page two is a list of projects that are in progress, those that we're working on closing, those that are closed and in progress, as well as planning advances through the federal program. Are there any questions?
Okay, on the top form, we have Cedar Point, May of 14, Central Iron County, November of 14, that were authorized dates.
For, yes, the Cedar Point, Big Plains, May and November, those are both in progress. They were both actually well siting and aquifer studies, and so those are typically more drawn out than a standard planning advance that we normally do. So last communication from both Cedar Point and Central Iron was that those studies are coming to a close, and we should have a report relatively soon on that. So those, even though they were authorized some time ago, the studies do take additional time for the aquifer studies.
And then on the next one, we have three. Forest Land, February of 14, Kane County, March of 11, and Harriman, March of 12.
Forest Glen is one that was a phased project. We explained that to the board when it was authorized, that construction. Forest Glen is a small community up in the Cottonwood Canyon area, so it's very high. Construction season is short, and they had a number of projects that they were in need of. They are progressing. I believe they've completed their tank, and they've completed some of the line installation that they wanted to do, and they are working on on finishing that one up. They should be done, if not this year, then next year, but that was a phased project. Kane County, Johnson Canyon. This one was delayed due to federal intervention, if you remember. They had trouble getting rights of way and easements to their tank property through BLM. They submitted a number of reports and requests to BLM, and then BLM would change their mind and say they needed something else. And so I was actually just down in Kanab a month ago or so to do the final construction inspection on this project. We should be closing that out fairly soon. Harriman was another one where they went through a number of iterations after the project was authorized. They had a location for the tank that they wanted to construct and the size that they wanted, and then the bond issue actually failed. They wanted to do a special assessment area, and there were a number of landowners in that special assessment area that objected to that, and so they've moved that particular location. And I believe the construction is done there, and we're just waiting for the final punch list to be completed. We can issue the operating permit and close that one out as well.
Okay, thank you, Michael. It's just nice to know that some of these that's been on the books are moving forward.
They are moving forward, yes.
Any other questions from the board? Okay, moving on. Next on our agenda is the project priority list. And Michael, you have that one also.
Yes, thank you. We've added two new projects to the project priority list. Boulder Farmstead scored 35.7 points. Their project that they're requesting this money for is to repair roads from the waterline project that the board authorized a couple of years ago. This is a request for additional funds to complete that project. San Juan Spanish Valley has added the project priority list with 25.3 points, and their project consists of a new water system. Staff is recommending the Drinking Water Board approve the updated project priority list.
We will receive a motion.
So moved.
I can't see down there. Who was who? Okay. And a second?
Second. Roger.
Okay. Mary Ann, are you getting those? You can see better than I can. Okay. We have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. We do not have any state funding requests for this particular agenda, so we'll move into the federal funding. And the first item is Boulder Farmstead. Michael?
Yes, thank you. Boulder Farmstead Water Company is requesting additional funding of $35,000 to finish the construction of their 2014 waterline project. The original project was authorized by the board on May 9th, 2014. They authorized $2 million with $1 million in principal forgiveness for 30 years at 0% interest to Boulder Farmstead. The water system components are substantially complete. There is final road grading and road repair work that needs to be done. One of the PRV vaults needs a sump pump, and the engineer is also requesting additional funding for remaining construction management. The cost estimate does include $10,000 for legal issues and bonding, because since this did come to the board after they had already been authorized and closed on the original loan, they will need to go through the bond procedure again to get this additional funding. As discussed by the Financial Assistance Committee during their conference call, we do understand and the committee understood that the $10,000 for legal and bonding would not be needed if the board were to authorize 100% principal forgiveness for this remaining funding. The water system, though, has requested that if the board does authorize the $25,000 as principal forgiveness, that the remaining $10,000 for a total of $35,000 could be left in there as a contingency to be used only if a change order is approved by the division. The financial information for Boulder Farmstead, their median adjusted gross income is $22,697, which is 54% of the state. MAGI, their average monthly water bill is $30.75, which is 1.63% of the local MAGI. Base evaluation did return an interest rate of 2.1% for 20 years and gave an after-project water bill that would be 1.78% of the local MAGI. So Boulder Farmstead does qualify as a disadvantaged community. The Financial Assistance Committee has recommended that the Drinking Water Board authorize a $35,000 construction loan with $35,000 in principal forgiveness to Boulder Farmstead to complete their 2014 water system project.
Okay, we've heard the report from Michael on that. Do we have representatives from Boulder Farmstead here with us today? If you'll come forward, please. State your name.
Yes, Daniel Hall, I'm actually with Jones and DeMille Engineering.
And is there anything else you'd like to add to Michael's report?
Just regarding it's just for the road repairs, finish up the project. One thing I did want to add for the board is Boulder Town actually did front the money to help make these repairs. The repairs have been made, but this would just go to covering that cost to make those repairs. We needed to get those repairs made because the road maintenance is planning to do some chip sealing this month. So we were kind of at a time constraint there.
Okay, questions from the board?
So this money will go to pay back Boulder, right?
Yes, and it'll pay back Boulder and just the final closeout on the project.
And I just had one question, and probably because it's called out in this report, I don't think we've ever had road repair work called out before as a part of the construction of the water systems.
True. It's typically not called out as a line item in the packet, although it is a line item in the construction. It's also authorized under the fund program itself, because we realize that if you're going to tear up the street to put in a water line, you got to repair the street once you're done. So it is part of construction and reimbursable expense.
Other questions from the board?
Just two. So with the project being substantively complete now, as I understand, is all of the costs less than the $35,000 we're considering?
Yes.
Okay. And then just a comment. I don't think it's wise for us to make them go through all the loan process. $10,000 on a $35,000 or on a $25,000 doesn't seem like a good use of resources. So if you're ready, I'll make a motion.
Any other questions?
If there's no other comments.
Okay, we'll receive a motion.
I would propose that the board authorize a $35,000 construction loan with $35,000 in principal forgiveness for completion of this project.
I'll second that.
And a second. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, our next item on the agenda is Wales, and Michael, you are the man of the hour, it seems to be.
At least Julie's here for the last one, so you don't have to listen to me all afternoon.
Okay, we'll invite representatives up. And if you will state your name for our records, please.
Keith Jensen, Mayor of Walestown.
Justin Atkinson with Sunrise Engineering.
Okay. Go ahead, Michael.
Thank you. Walestown is requesting $253,000 in financial assistance to drill, equip, and connect a new well to the existing distribution system. Total project costs are estimated at $266,327, and Wales will be contributing $13,327 to the project. Due to current source capacity issues and restricted water use in Wales Town, the town has requested the board to give this application emergency status. Wales Town has lost use of all but one well for drinking water purposes. Outdoor watering has been limited since June 2016. The town has considered several solutions, including rehabilitating an existing well and drilling a new well. And based on project economics and engineering review, the town has determined that drilling a new well will provide the best long-term solution to this source capacity issue. Wales has a population of 302 with 116 residential connections. And based on their financial information, their 2014 median adjusted gross income is $37,642, or 90% of the state MEGI. Current average monthly water bill is calculated at $43.04 per month, or 1.37% of local MEGI. The funding options that staff evaluated are in the table below. The base evaluation is a full loan at 2.04% for 20 years and gave an after-project water bill of $61.74, or 1.97% of local MEGI. Therefore, Whalestown does qualify as a disadvantaged community and does qualify for consideration for additional subsidization. Due to the emergency nature of the request, this project was not reviewed by the Financial Assistance Committee. Therefore, it's a staff recommendation that the Drinking Water Board authorize option number 4 on the table, a $253,000 construction loan at 0% interest for 30 years, with $126,000 in principal forgiveness to Whalestown to drill, equip, and connect a new well to the existing drinking water distribution system. The repayable loan amount will be $127,000.
And do the representatives have anything to add?
I just want to say thanks to the board for your time and consideration in this matter. Whalestown is very appreciative of anything that you can do to help us here. Originally, the town was supplied by a spring, and it is nearly dried up as because of the drought. So we rely on our wells for our drinking water. And with one well down, it has caused quite an emergency in town. So just thank you.
Okay, we'll turn it to the board for questions.
I've got one, Betty, and that's we're financing a well for 30 years that likely, not trying to curse your project, but likely will require a pump and motor replacement. What plans do you have to be able to set that money aside? I mean, they don't make pumps and motors like they used to, unfortunately.
Sure, and Whalestown already has an emergency maintenance fund in place for emergencies. We were originally planning to repair this well and use our emergency funds for that, and just to pay for the project completely by ourselves without any additional assistance. That would completely deplete our emergency funding for any future maintenance, but we do have funds available for motors and pumps and system maintenance.
Okay, thank you.
Just quickly, the new well, is it going to be located near the old well? Is this somewhat of a certainty as to being able to find water in the aquifer where you're seeking it?
It's never certain.
Yeah, well, it was a trick question.
Yeah. Paul,
because I'm smart and little. My agency just drilled a 2,000-foot well and found absolutely nothing. So it's those are realities. But are we in the proximity of an existing
well? We are. This well will be drilled within the same boundaries of the other well, and it was producing good water at the time of the failure of the casing. So.
That answers my question.
Just noting there still is a speculative nature to all of this as we go.
Any other questions or comments from the board? Seeing none, I will receive a motion.
I'll make that motion, Betty, that the board authorize a $253,000 construction loan at 0% interest for 30 years. With $126,000 in principal forgiveness, and for the Whalestown to drill, equip, and connect a new well to the existing drinking water system. So that makes the balance, I suppose, the repayable loan amount of $127,000.
And do I have a second?
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any other discussion? All in favor of the motion, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Your motion passes.
Thank you. So what's your time frame?
yesterday.
any water hooks, we're hoping to be completed by this spring. As the winter months come, we typically don't use much water in the winter months, so we should be okay and be able to complete the project by spring.
How deep a well?
180 feet.
Good luck.
Thank you. Okay, and our last item for funding requests is San Juan Spanish Valley. Julie. Anyone representing them, please? If you'll please introduce yourself.
Good morning, I'm Kelly Pearson, San Juan County Administrator.
Wow, that's bad.
And I'm Ryan Jolly with Jones and DeMille Engineering.
Okay, San Juan Spanish Valley Special Service District is requesting $2,550,000 to develop a new culinary water system. The total project cost is expected to be $5.1 million, and they have requested the other half from the Community Impact Board. Currently, the Spanish Valley area of San Juan County does not have a culinary water system. They have about 230 existing homes that are on private wells. The county has recently formed a special service district, and they have acquired water rights to support a culinary public water system. They have also done an engineering study to look at alternatives. One of the alternatives was to connect with Grand Water, Sewer, and Service Agency, as well as the alternative that's being proposed today, which is to construct a standalone culinary public water system. The proposed project includes a new well, a backup well, a 500,000-gallon storage tank, and distribution lines. The local MAGI for San Juan County is 31,965, which is 76% of the state. A full loan based on their estimated O&M costs and the calculated interest rate of 2.48% interest for 20 years results in an average bill of about $121 per connection, which is 4.56% of their MAGI. So based on this, they do qualify to be considered for additional subsidization. We looked at three different options. Just to note before I go over them, the maximum principal forgiveness that we looked at was 30%, because that is the ceiling requirement of most of the capitalization grants. Option one is 20% principal forgiveness at the calculated interest rate of 2.48%. That resulted in a water bill of $107, which is 4% of MAGI. Option two is 30% principal forgiveness at 1% interest for 30 years. That resulted in a water bill of about $79, which is 2.96% of MAGI. Option three is 30% principal forgiveness for 30 years at 0% interest, which looks like a water bill of about $74.50, and that's 2.8% of the local MAGI. Also note that all of these options were evaluated based on CIB providing funding, which this is just the word that we got so far, that it will likely be 50% grant with 2.5% interest for 20 years, or 30 years, sorry. The committee recommended option three, which is a loan of $2,550,000 at 0% interest for 30 years with $765,000 in principal forgiveness.
Anything to add?
Just thanks for your time. You know, as the administrator, I do get lots of calls from the Spanish Valley citizens of when are we going to provide this service to them. They have lots of wells in such a small area in Spanish Valley that are unregulated, and they have problems each year with the pumps. And this is something that we've held a public hearing on, and this is what the citizens have asked us to come and try to get them a water system. there's 230 households there now, and those that know Spanish Valley or Moab area, the only place it can grow is to the south, where into San Juan County. And there's just going to continue to be growth there and more wells if we don't provide a water system to them. And that's why we're here. We appreciate your time, and we hope that you will take these recommendations and fund this project.
Okay. I think you probably answered my very first question. It was about public support. And that, so you have had a public hearing. You feel good about getting a majority of the private well owners signed up for a public system?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. And then, and Julie, I have another question for you, and that is on our report that we have here, since they don't have a public system right now, how did you establish the current water bill and make your evaluations on 4717?
So we looked at what they anticipated their O&M costs would be for the first year after the project was constructed. And so we look at that. They don't have any outstanding debt, so really it's just that cost and then the debt service for this loan, CIB's loan, and that's divided amongst the connections. And that's how we get the water bill.
Okay. Questions from the board?
I would just, you know, since I'm at the other end of the valley, I think this is very prudent, and get these people off the well system up there, and I think it's a good thing that what they proposed, so.
Just a question. This option three financial analysis is based on half the funding package. Did I understand you to say that CIB is going to do half of theirs of the loan also?
Yes. So CIB's funding half at 50% loan, 50% grant,
and so
30% interest. I mean, 30 years, 2.5% interest.
So even if we were to do option three, their actual water bill is still going to be higher than 7446. It'll be 7446 plus.
No, because we took CIB's loan into consideration in the valuation.
So this does include that consideration.
Yep.
Okay, all right.
And I would add that the community, based on what we saw, the staff recommendation is that the Community Impact Board has said that we'll probably readjust our presentation to them to probably get more grant out of them so that we can get back to that affordable amount. So right now the application is for 50-50, but we hope to get more grant out of them so that it's back to that affordable rate.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Receive
question?
A motion.
I have one.
Okay.
What makes us lean to 0% versus 1% for $4 a month?
Well, we wanted to present all of the options, obviously, knowing that a little bit of interest is good for our fund. And then when we presented it to the Financial Assistance Committee, we didn't specify which one we chose. We let them choose, and they chose the 0% interest because the water bill was less, and it's still well over 1.75%, which is what we determined to be the maximum affordable water bill. So that's why.
Okay, thank you.
And as I recall, that was our big concern, that was still over the 1.75%.
Yes, which is why I pointed out that we only looked at a maximum of 30%, because we really can't go over that with our capitalization grant funding requirements.
And that was the ceiling limits on the 30%.
Yes.
It had to be factored into it also. Any other questions? Receive a motion.
I would propose that the board authorize the Drinking Water Board to authorize the loan of $2,550,000 at 0% interest for 30 years with a $765,000 in principal forgiveness of San Juan Spanish Valley District, Water and Sewer District.
And a second?
I'll second that.
Have a motion and second. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, completing the financial portion of this meeting. I'll turn the time back over to Chairman Paul.
Thank you, Betty. Moving on to item number five, this is bringing back, let's see, who's handling this one? The rulemaking. Oh, you're doing this one? Okay. Oh, right next to me. It says your name right here, too, if I'd read it. This is back to the rulemaking on R309-105-15 and R309-400-12. Ken, thank you.
Yes, at the last board meeting on July 8th in Vernal, we asked permission to proceed with rulemaking of changes to this rule, but we've reconsidered. We haven't gone forward with that motion in the previous board meeting, and we're proposing the language relative to R309-105 that deals specifically with the submittal of the annual report, and we're trying to be in line with the legislative language under Bill 305 passed in the recent legislative session. Then the second bill rule change is on the following page, and this deals with the assessment of 50 points in the IPS system for failure to submit a report. And then on the next page in the handout, highlighted in yellow, it is not, it's an existing rule, but it indicates that if an operator willingly or knowingly submits a report in error, that he could forfeit his license. There's a process that one would have to go through before this would happen. They would be permitted to submit their case before the Operator Certification Commission, and the commission would decide whether to withdraw the license of the operator. Request that the board authorize staff to proceed with the two rules.
Thank you. Any discussion on these two items then? I'll entertain a motion then to authorize to begin rulemaking to amend.
So moved.
A motion by Brett. Have a second?
Second.
Second by Betty Tage.
Tage has got it.
Tage. All in favor indicate aye.
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 Any opposed? Very good. Thank you. And then Bernie will invite you up on this fluoridation discussion. This is R309-535-5.
It to begin rulemaking to amend R309-535-5, which is the fluoridation section of R309-535. So just to note once again that the rule does not require fluoridation. It doesn't set minimum fluoride levels. It simply imposes design and construction requirements on systems that choose to fluoridate. So if they decide to fluoridate, this rule applies. We also have rules, which we're not touching, that do establish a fluoride MCL. both a primary and a secondary MCL, and those rules aren't affected by this amendment at all. The current rule is basically based on Penn State standards. It borrows heavily from it. As a matter of fact, it is in many cases identical to the 10 state standards fluoridation requirements. And the requirements in 10 state standards are good, but they're limited in their scope. And so what the division wanted to do is it wanted to provide a more comprehensive design and requirements for safe and efficient operation of fluoridation facilities. So what we did is we evaluated fluoridation design requirements in the current rule, in 10 state standards. The Centers for Disease Control also have fluoridation requirements. And AWWA, the American Water Works Association, has fluoridation requirements. So we looked at all those requirements. We also incorporated the division's experience reviewing plans and inspecting fluoridation facilities. And we came up with a basic set of design requirements that we thought should be included in a rule. We organized the proposed rule or the proposed amendment according to four sections. We have general requirements that apply to all four fluoridation facilities. And then we have three sections that apply specifically to individual types of fluoridation. So acid fluoridation, saturated fluoridation, and dry feed fluoridation facilities. So in the package, I included a brief summary of what we're proposing to do. I included a list of all the changes, which included all the deletions from the existing rule, additions to the new rule, and changes to the language in the existing rule. Then I included this one package that showed all the changes to the current rule in red, and they're all struck out, so you can see which individual requirements that we're not taking over verbatim to the new rule. Some of those requirements are going over in some sort of form, but not exactly how they are in the existing rule. Then it also showed the proposed amendment with all the new requirements in red and underlined. And if you look through that, you can see that we have added quite a few requirements that aren't in the existing rule. The current rule is 3 pages. The proposed amendment is 7 pages. And the last thing I included in the package was this somewhat impossible to read format where it shows the current rule completely struck through. And the proposed rule completely underlined. And this is the actual format of the rule that will be filed in the Utah State Bulletin. So if you give us authorization to proceed, our anticipated schedule would be to file the amendment with the Division of Administrative Rules by the 15th of September, and then publish the rule in the Utah State Bulletin on the 1st of October, and then have a 30-day comment period for the month of October. Then depending on what happens, we could potentially be back before the board in November to finalize the rule. So I'd be glad to try to answer any questions about the changes that we're proposing or any of the stuff that was included in your package. I know it's a lot. I kind of took the kitchen sink approach to this and sort of included everything I could think of to try to make it understandable what changes we're actually making to the rules.
No, that's very helpful. I had two questions.
Sure.
How many systems in the state, and I don't mean to quiz, I don't want, you know, if we don't know, it's fine, but do we know how many systems in the state add fluoride to their systems?
I don't know, and if you don't mind, I'll look to the back of the room to see if someone, or can you?
In the counties of Salt Lake and Davis County, the counties require the community systems to fluoridate. In addition to that, Brigham City in Box Elder County fluoridates, Helper in Carbon County fluoridates, and I believe, but I'm not certain on this, that the Ute Tribe also fluoridates.
Okay. So we have quite a few systems. Ying Ying?
Okay.
You getting that in the minutes, Mary Ann? Are you okay?
I got it, yeah.
Okay. Mary Ann does a great job, by the way. So one of my questions whenever we talk about changing rules is, what will this impact be upon those systems? Will they have to bring their fluoride systems into compliance with this? Or is this going to apply only to new systems? I mean, I imagine like most of our rules, it becomes part of the survey that's done every year when they look at the system.
The sanitary survey. I know that a lot of the requirements probably won't change because they're simply expanding the existing requirements or maybe clarifying the existing requirements. I know that there's one place in the proposed rule where we do have a new requirement that has to do, I think, with if you have a separate fluoride room from other operating areas, that you have a window in between, and we put a date that's available, the 1st of January 2017, so that wouldn't be retroactive.
To answer Paul's question, I want to use one example. The existing fluoridation rule is copied from the 10 state standard, so it's meant for very small water systems. So it does not have any secondary containment requirement. However, in Utah, the majority of the fluoridation facilities are injecting fluorosilicic acid, which is pH 1, as extremely dangerous. Then after we implemented the current rule for about at least 15 years, we realized not having the secondary containment requirement, it's not sufficient to protect public health. So the reality is the current regulation does not require secondary containment, but we don't see that we can go back to require the existing installations to all have secondary containment. But we hope to capture the future installations to make sure if there's an acid leak, it will not flow out of the well house, because we actually, 2 years ago, there was a system, their acid leaked out the door, and the water operator just by chance drove by the well house, noticed the driveway was bubbling. So they were able to contain the acid on site, but that made us realize living with the current rule is not, we're not doing a good enough job to protect public health. That's why we choose to modify the existing rule to add the secondary containment.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments or discussion by the board?
I have one question. Does fluoride adversely impact the sanitary sewer system? And, you know, I mean, if you're going to be, if you've added fluoride to your water system.
Oh, you mean if the water is discharged into a sewer?
Right.
I don't know, but I would think it's added at such low quantities, I couldn't see how it would necessarily affect it. The other thing is it occurs naturally in some waters, and you know, this is at, I think, the recommended addition, or the recommended minimum level is 0.7 milligrams per liter. It's pretty low. I don't know, is anybody else, do you know?
Thank you.
The sewer bugs no longer have to brush their teeth, though. They can just keep eating. There you go. Ken, did you have a comment?
Just a clarification. This is a construction standards rule. So it would apply to new construction, just to clarify that there is a kind of a grandfather provision imposed or implied by the fact that they're construction standards.
Okay. That was my question, so Ken just answered it. And secondly, there at the top of, I don't know what page this is, top of page one, where there's a note that explains that the rule does not require the addition of fluoride. I'm wondering about the second sentence, a public water system that chooses to add fluoride to the drinking water. I operate a public water system that uses all this nasty fluorosilicic acid that Ying's talking about, and yet I did not choose to do it. And so I'm wondering if, maybe this is a loophole for me not to have to do it, but because I did not choose it. But I'm wondering if we ought to look at the wording of that as we go forward. If many of us are required to do it by someone else, in this case, the county.
What if we just set a public water system that adds water to it?
There you go.
That'd be good. Any other comments? I'll then entertain a motion to this request by staff.
I'll make that motion that the board authorize the division staff to begin the remaking process to amend R309-535-5 and to file a proposed rule amendment for publication in the Utah State Bulletin on October 1st, 2016 with the one minor change in wording.
Have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second, none.
I have a second by Brett. All in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you very much. Appreciate your section's work on these rules. Moving on to item number 7. Kurt, did he leave?
He was not there after the carpenter again.
So, do we have a spokesman for Dell? I thought. We'll skip Kurt and maybe come back to it. Ken, give you some time on your report.
I'm going to move the microphone closer.
Paige, what's that sound?
That's that has no military value whatsoever.
Somebody's got some awful bad jokes back there.
Something.
Wanted to report on a modification that occurred within the division this last month. We split the rules section into two sections, the rules implementation section and the rules enforcement section. Just by way of background, the EPA rules, which the rules section before single section and the two sections after deal with, are very complicated. There are 13 general rules that EPA requires that we implement, and it's based on a number of different factors, the monitoring specifically, the system type, population, water treatment, so forth. And there are 12 different frequencies of monitoring for individual contaminants. Relates to 1,872 potential monitoring schedules. It is a complex issue, so we divided the section into two sections, and it does seem to make sense that we did so. And just want to report that that has been done.
Very good. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Ken, and I appreciate the acronym section you put added to it. What TWR is and HAB is. And
well, that's if you talk to anyone from EPA, that's the language they speak. And as EPA rules, go, it makes sense to have the acronyms down below. Would like to report on one other item that's not on the calendar, but I won't ask for a vote either. A week from tomorrow, September 7th, the division, the select portion of the division, will be meeting with the Governor's Office of Management and Budget. We'll be talking about the legislative audit dealing with our source capacity requirements. And the direction that the legislature gave us earlier this year is that we would use our SRF monies to purchase equipment and to evaluate the study. We sent out a letter in mid-June asking for a water system to volunteer, and we got a very mixed report. Heard from 26 systems, and of those, nine of the systems said they had data that they were willing to be shared with us. We recognize that two of those nine systems had data that we could perhaps use, but the remaining seven we would have to get additional information to actually satisfy the needs of the study. So we're in a situation, and this is the not necessarily the approach we'll take, but to describe for the board, we're sitting in a car where the engine has been destroyed. We don't have the funding, we don't have enough water systems to make a definitive decision on changing our rules.
You don't have enough gas in the car.
It's not only gas, we don't have an engine that runs. So we've got the option of asking the legislature for more money to actually fund with grant monies the information we need, which is probably driving the car full speed through a brick wall, or use our existing rules, which would, in essence, say that we would not complete all the recommendations from the legislative audit, which is like driving the car over the cliff. And these are tough decisions, as you can imagine, and we'll be presenting that to the board. One of the things that we will be bringing up in connection with this and in connection with advising the systems that we've at least talked with is using some of the state SRF monies to do a evaluation to specifically define the types of meters we need and the cost of such meters and compare them with the existing meters that are out there. One of the things that the current proposal would get us involved with is water systems that would come and request automated meters, and they would probably want the meters that would meet their needs rather than the meters that meet the division's needs. Specifically, meters that could be easily read and accurately read rather than lying on meter readers that have to fight the dog in the backyard or whatever it is to read it or misread the gauges. Secondly, that they would just have it for billing purposes, but it would not distinguish between indoor and outdoor use. It would not measure the peak day demands from sources because they wouldn't replace sources. They would just be using customer meters. So it's something that we're going to be proposing to the governor and proceeding based on the output from the meeting a week from tomorrow on September 7th. The Wandering Report, kind of a status report of where we are so far.
How much of the state funds would you consider utilizing?
Probably between 20 and 30,000.
So not much. Very
not
small
much.
Amount.
Okay. Right.
Tate,
the reason for the meeting with GOMB, is it to talk the merits of the technical side of this, or is it to talk funding?
It's going to be a combination of both. Last year, had a number of meetings with the Governor's Office of Management Budget. They had in the Governor's budget a proposal that the legislature essentially threw away. It was, I think it was $5.5 million, although some of that came from the loan funds, but some from the general funds. and the legislature said just use the board's SRF monies. $1 million from the federal side and $500,000 from the state side.
Right. So that's presently authorized.
It is currently authorized.
So GOMB is, are they exploring further ways to help you finance it? Or I guess I'm confused as to why they're involved.
They didn't call us, we called them.
Oh, okay. That helps.
Yeah, basically saying using the money we have and the water systems that have volunteered, we don't have a sample size that would give us the confidence to actually change our rules. And what is still unknown is if we a water system comes in and wants federal funding for metering equipment, would they be willing to have a project that costs more than they want? And could we offset that cost by reducing the interest rate? But it would still be a loan, and we don't have a good feel for that. That's why we're going after the study. Just another thing that would provide us is this proposal that the legislature directed us to follow, is it even viable?
Good. Thank you. Appreciate that update. Final item is rural water. Kurt, I understand you're going to talk to us.
Well, not really much. And I better hurry up because
they're going to be going again?
We told them we'd be done in 30 minutes. Wow.
It was 20 minutes ago.
Talk about a mess. I'm sorry about that. I had no idea that that was going on, but apparently there's a contractor that's under a deadline and he doesn't care. But anyway, so I've been trying to think of a story or a joke or something so Betty doesn't get mad at me, and I can't really come up with anything, only to just say, you know, there is an advantage to being fat. None of you know that, and that is like, you know, when you go out and you start throwing your weight around, like, you finally get something done, you know.
This is an example of it, huh?
Yeah. My little grandson, 3 years old, he crawls up on my lap and says, "Grandpa, you're fat." And I, anyway. Then he starts pounding on my belly like a drum. So, there's Dale. Well, I'm up here now. We appreciate you
Dale,
being here.
Dale, we invite you to come sit by him and help him if you need to.
We appreciate you being here and coming to the conference to hold your board meeting. I better.
Yeah, what he said. Yeah, thanks for being here, folks. I've got no report whatsoever. It's all up to Kurt. But yeah, thanks for being here. We really do appreciate the Drinking Water Board being at our conferences. I don't know. It means a lot to us. Just let me say that. I think even though you may not have a lot of the operators and water system people in the room here, they know you're here. And they saw Paul at lunch. They did. And but they do. They appreciate the fact that you all are a part of this bigger organization that helps them and does things for them. And they know you are part of that. So thank you. I'll let Kurt talk. Have at it. If you say anything wrong, you're in deep trouble.
As we travel around and see these, work with these little towns and districts and so on, and get involved with them, helping them, and you know, sometimes we get to know them pretty well, and it's just good to be able to see them come here and get what we've been working on kind of taken care of for them. It means a lot to them, but it means a lot to us too. Just for example, I've worked with whales a lot the last couple months, month and a half, and to see that project now starting to roll. It means an awful lot to them and also to us. As far as a report from my standpoint, with the county development program, we are on the October agenda for the six county Board of Health. And unless something flares up that we're not expecting, that should get adopted in that meeting, this non-public drinking water rule that we've been talking about for quite some time.
Kurt, where would that meeting be?
Richfield.
Oh. I was going to say, did you want some board support? But that's a little ways.
Okay. Well, that would be great, but I can't even remember the date for sure. I think it's the third Thursday that they meet. I can let you know more about that if you want me to, because that'll be a big thing once we get that done. That'll cover six counties and for me it'll be quite an accomplishment to have that behind us. And I mean, it won't really be behind us, but at least it'll be something that then we can work with and continue to train them and get some good things happening that way. I'm becoming more convinced all the time the need for this type of thing to be done with these little small systems. It's just some of the stuff that's being done that we hear about and see with these real small little subdivisions are just a shared well type of thing between a couple homes. It's pretty scary. Sometimes happens.
We heard today to support what you're saying is we had that county discussion this morning and I forget who it was. Ying stepped out. But they were mentioning, it was one of the county engineer health department people, and they said this morning their office received seven new subdivisions for seven lots.
That's in Baltimore.
All next to each other. So, I mean, the things we're talking about are still being perpetuated throughout the state.
No. Too bad,
Kevin. Knew about that?
It was Juab County.
I think
John Chartier was the one.
I think it was John. I was mentioning it, yeah.
About that. That it's more of that going on in the Mona area, just outside of town. So anyway, yeah, we've got to get that passed, and I think we will. And we'll get some more things going on in some other counties as well. I don't really have much more to report to you than that, just for myself anyway.
I probably do need to say one more thing. When you all were in Vernal, if you remember, we talked about the problem that we're having with the other two state-funded employees, the Management Tech, Brian and Terry, Management Tech and Compliance Server Writer. We overcame all of those hurdles that were thrown before us. Yeah, it was interesting that this competitive organization required us to go through all those hoops and then never submitted a proposal, which on one hand is fine, great, you know, that made me feel good. But on the other hand, it's like, what the heck? So,
did you get that, Marianne? Okay, all right.
I could have said worse. But we did, that contract has been signed, it's in place. I didn't want you to worry that Brian and Terry weren't in the room today. That's why I thought I would say something. They're working, I hope, somewhere. But that is done and taken care of. So appreciate everybody working with us on that and all the stuff that happens.
Very good. Well, thank you. Any comments from the board? Anything?
Just appreciate being invited here and seeing the exhibits and socializing with the people that are here.
Yeah, super.
Very good.
Thank you.
Any other items, staff, that you have that we need to... Michael, you got some?
Yeah.
Please.
Good news, bad news.
What's that?
Good news, bad news.
Yes.
Should have brought this up at the end of the SRF portion of the board meeting. We, as staff, have received another request for an emergency board meeting. The area of Winchester Hills has had a well failure, and they're looking for $600,000 plus in financial assistance to drill a new well to replace the one that has failed. We have an application in hand, but it is very incomplete, so we've asked them to give us more information, because they all they had in there was construction costs. They didn't have any other costs accounted for. But I just wanted to make the board aware of that and ask if there's any concern from the board about holding another emergency telecom meeting within 2 or 3 weeks from today.
I don't have any concerns. However, I will be out of the country, way out of the country, from September 11th to the 22nd.
No cell service.
Not at the rate they're going to charge.
That's fine. As long as we can get a quorum for that meeting, we will be fine.
This is a private water company?
You know, I haven't
break my record,
looked into it that closely yet. I just found out about it early last week. We got the application Thursday or Friday of last week, and when I saw that it was as incomplete as it was, I asked them to get us more information, because it wasn't enough to bring to the board for any kind of proper evaluation. So.
Michael, I don't want to break my record of not missing a meeting.
We will see how soon they get us the information and how soon we can get the email out and find a time when everybody's available. So if you are okay with that, then I will proceed with under that direction. Thank you.
Okay.
Yep. All right. Very good. All right. Next board meeting. The next board meeting will be on Friday, November 18th at the home office, 1 p.m. And with that, I'll recommend a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Have a motion and a second, I hope.
Second.
And a second. All in favor to go home?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Absolutely.